there was a sense of dread when I got the email asking to talk. That's always, in any aspect of life, a little nerve-wracking. And so I think I felt more dread in that moment and then relief once I knew what it was going to be. And once you know, you can manage it, right?
Welcome to Re-Energize.
This is a podcast about renewable energy.
Yeah, we know what you're thinking. Another duo of clean tech bros wonking out on energy policy.
Think again. This is about your energy.
How do you find peace on the emotional roller coaster of renewable development? How has this work transformed you?
We ask these questions together with people who have lived it.
Plug in.
It's time to re-energize.
I've got prepared banter today. No, I was just, you know, you have like, you know how it is. You've got like a minute, you know, whatever, you're waiting for the call. You're like, wait, Tess, Jay and I talk all the time now, but like Tess, I haven't seen in a decade. And the last time I saw you, Tess, Jay was there. We were at a renewable energy marketing conference in Houston.
All right.
And you introduced me to what a hot toddy is. I didn't know what it was because I have like 4 units of alcohol a year. I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. Yeah, yeah.
That's funny. You know, it's probably because I have this thing where when I'm at a conference, I lose my voice, like hands down every time. It only happens at conferences, and I do a lot of talking professionally, so I'm not consuming hot toddies too often, but at conferences, it's
very high hit necessary. Rate. Yeah, I remember you asked like the waiter, you were like, "Can I have a hot toddy?" And they were like, "Yeah, you can do a hot toddy. Hot toddy." You both had like a moment. It was like I felt like I was missing out on something. You know?
That's great.
Well, I don't know what this says about hot toddies or what it says about me, but I literally cannot remember this at all. So to me,
we were there, but Jay, you were okay. So you weren't sitting down with us yet.
Okay, good.
This was just Tess and me. Don't worry, you're off the hook. So you and I caught up later that evening. I think briefly, like, you know, Tess and I parted ways, you know, went to our respective, you know, hotel rooms. And then like, Jay, I think you and I had like a quick conversation and you had just been hanging out with your high school buddy and you were like, yeah, really good seeing him. He was really obsessed with waves. It was everything was like energy waves and this wave and that wave. And I was like having a hard time understanding what he was saying.
Yes.
I don't know if that's ringing a bell, but that was the same evening.
That does. And it was Austin, then not Houston.
Oh, it was Austin. Thank you. It was Austin. Together we have a complete story. This is why, Tess, you know, we do this podcast
together.
You make
a good team. Yeah.
Yeah.
We make a good team. Tess, it's so great to have you here.
I'm thrilled to be here.
We've been really looking forward to talking with you. Why don't we do a quick presence check-in, whether or not this makes it to the podcast. Doesn't matter. Joel, what's your presence check-in?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say yellow. I think I'm like coming down with maybe the beginning of a cold. And I went for a walk to grab some lunch and came back. So it's like heading in the direction of chartreuse. And the more we talk here, I feel like it's getting greener. That's the real time presence update. Yeah.
Maybe that green juice will help too, Joel.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's not a hot toddy. It's like, you know, 1:37 right now as we're doing this podcast, but I've got a nice green juice here. Yeah.
Tess, how about you? How are you today?
I am feeling good and grounded. I am looking out the window and I see these beautiful green leaves. Spring has sprung. I'm up in Boston and it comes with allergies, though, Joel. I found myself wondering, maybe you've got allergies, but yeah, I'm doing good. Good. I'm excited to be here talking with you both. It's been a long, long time. So this is good. It's good vibes.
Awesome. Jay, how about you?
Feeling pretty good. Things have settled down. It was a very busy week work-wise. There's a lot going on. And then on the home front, we're getting towards high school graduation. We're getting towards fifth grade graduation. And so there's a lot of activity going on. And Joel, you might remember me complaining earlier this week about just having a really hard time right now, kind of juggling everything and doing what needs to be done to parent a elementary school kid is like, you know, the third time around, it's just hard. But I'm feeling good. Happy to be here talking with you both.
Thanks for being honest, Jay. You know, that could be like a hard thing, right? You know, you're like, ah, oh, I don't want to say this out loud. You know, like it's true, right? In terms of how you're feeling. So that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, I might have to cut that out.
You might have to cut that out for the public consumption, which is totally understandable and exactly what I would do.
When your kid's listening to the podcast. Yeah,
well, my oldest listens to the podcast like religiously.
Yeah.
She loves it. So she loves listening to the podcast.
I remember when she was a baby.
Yeah.
Was going to say born. I don't know if the years line up properly for that.
Not born. You might remember when the last one was born or the second one was born.
Yeah.
But probably not the first.
Wild.
We're really happy to have Tess O'Brien here with us today. Joel and I both worked very closely with Tess 10 years ago-ish. So it's been a while.
Maybe more.
Very, I would say, formative times for all three of us in our careers.
Mm.
And so, you know, really influential. When I, you know, think about Tess, I just think so fondly of the experience of working with you, just the positivity that you're always bringing, the idea that, hey, we can figure it out. You know, here's 10 different ways we can try to market this product to make something happen. You know, I think always really helped our team drive things forward. You were an incredible leader on that team. And so, you know, it's an honor to be talking with you here now after all this time about, well, we don't know what story you're going to tell us, but, you know, let me just give everybody a picture of what you've been doing in your career, because it's very impressive. Tess O'Brien is a climate tech founder and executive who's driven sustainable innovation for nearly two decades across the energy, consumer, and technology sectors. She specializes in transforming early stage ventures into market leaders through strategic partnerships, product development, and customer acquisition. Most recently, as vice president of partnerships at Energy Sage, Tess helped scale the company from early stage startup to successful acquisition by Schneider Electric. During her 9-year tenure, she secured and managed partnerships with high profile organizations, including Wirecutter, which I love, by the way, I use all the time, Intuit, National Grid, Desire, which is the database of kind of like renewable programs in the country, Rewiring America, Sierra Club, and EWG. Directly contributing to the platform's growth to over 10 million users seeking renewable energy solutions for their homes. Over the course of her career, Tess has educated millions of Americans about clean energy options, facilitating the adoption of renewables as a key solution to climate change. Previously, Tess founded Clean Power Perks, an award-winning marketplace connecting conscious consumers with sustainable brands, including Timberland, Columbia Sportswear's Prana. As director of marketing and business development at Community Energy, she managed relationships with major utility clients and designed marketing programs that accelerated consumer adoption of renewable energy across many markets. Tess holds an MBA in sustainability and a BA in environmental studies. She's based in Boston with her family and currently focused on developing technology solutions that bridge the gap between consumer behavior and climate action while actively mentoring the next generation of women leaders in technology. Tess, it's so great to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Jay. It's really, really a treat to join you and Joel on this podcast. I have enjoyed listening and love what you're doing. It's not many podcasts where you can talk about LCOE and kind of deep vulnerabilities at the same time. So I'm psyched to be here. Thanks so much for having me and for the very kind intro.
So Tess, I'm sitting here listening to Jay's intro for you, and I'm interested to go back where it all started before this illustrious career happened. And so could you tell us, how did you get into renewable energy to begin with?
When I get that question, I have a tendency to go back to when I was like 3 or 4 years old. And I promise this won't be a very lengthy response. But I think I can trace it all back to, you know, having spent now 19 years working in the climate tech and renewable energy space. I trace it back to spending time in the Adirondack Mountains as a child and developing a deep respect and appreciation for nature. Jumping ahead to my undergrad years at Gettysburg College, I studied abroad in Denmark and in Copenhagen. Wind energy was just part of life there. And as was biking. I had some pretty gnarly wipeouts on ice patches biking in Denmark in the winter, but that's what they did. It was just the way of life. And I was so inspired by it and wanted to see that here. And so I came home from studying in Copenhagen, having met someone from the Danish Wind Energy Association and wanting to pursue a career in renewables. And that an alumni from Gettysburg happened to be working at Community Energy. And that's what got me started in my career.
Well, so Tess, we invited you here to tell us a story, an experience that you had in your career that was really impactful for you. Can you just give a quick summary to the audience before we dive into it?
Sure. So I know that a lot of your listeners are in the renewable energy development space, and a lot of my experience has been on a different side of the industry, but this story I think may be transferable. And it is about the canceling of a deal post-signing after a lengthy and competitive process that we won and signed a deal. And then because of COVID happening, this deal was signed right before COVID hit. The deal was canceled after the contract was signed. And that was pretty hard one to swallow, but there are a lot of learnings.
Yeah, well, that's painful. And you know, I think a lot of people, as you said, can relate, especially to the juxtaposition of COVID and deals that were signed before and things that happened, whether it was renegotiations or other deals being canceled kind of in the development space. And it's great to have you broadening the scope too of the stories, because there's so many aspects of this industry. So thanks for that.
This is great. I'm looking forward to it. This is a new one. This is a new angle. So Tess, let's go ahead and jump in. And before you kind of, you know, open up on the story itself, just help us set the stage. Where were you in your career and your personal life at the time?
Yeah, so I was in my mid-30s. I was leading partnerships. And at the time, it was a very, very small team. And I was a mom of a 2-year-old and don't think I knew it yet, but was also pregnant with my second. And this was right before COVID hit.
So very few responsibilities outside of work. Yeah, just that.
Yeah, I was all in, just focused on this one deal, nothing else.
On this one deal. Yeah.
So tell us the story. What happened here?
Yeah, so we would bid on B2B services, opportunities to craft software products and tools and programming to educate Americans about clean energy options and namely solar at the time. And this was an RFP process that we, you know, spent months on working to put together a really compelling proposal, and went through the written proposal process, a couple rounds of interviews. And I was really proud of the team that I had put together on this and the kind of work product that we produced and the relationship we'd built. And we were thrilled to be selected to provide these services to a state government in the US. So we had won this deal, signed the deal, celebrated, very excited.
And Tess, just arguing back, when you say you signed the deal, you know, in the preview that you shared with us, it was like right before COVID. I'm curious, like,
yeah.
How close was it? Was it?
Are I mean, we were talking like, weeks. We were talking
like February, late, because we all remember that time period. I don't know, you know, right? Like you remember March 2020. So this was like late February, early March.
Late February, 2020. Early March 2020.
And every listener could probably remember where they were like around that time, right? So that's interesting. Yeah.
I had worked my bum off on this deal. Had a family beach vacation with my husband and our daughter, my brother and my parents. We're going to Key West, and found out I was pregnant with my second a week before the beach vacation, which I so badly needed because I had worked so hard on this deal. and had known at that point that we wanted, COVID hit and we decided to cancel the trip, which I was really looking forward to. I remember the Celtics game was canceled, and that was my husband's benchmark for the seriousness of COVID. And the next day we didn't send our daughter back to daycare. And then we've kind of packed up our stuff and moved to Vermont. And so won the deal living in Boston before COVID was really real. And then, you know, moved up to Vermont and got an email from my main point of contact on this deal saying, hey, do you have some time to chat? And this was the span of a few weeks. We ended up having our conversation as soon as possible. And they told me that the state budget had been cut because of COVID and that they had to cancel the contract.
So painful.
Yeah.
Kind of like got chills a little bit here, just, you know, kind of living with you as you've taken us through this experience. And kind of, I think, you know, remembering my own experience of those days, I think it was also the NBA shutting down that said to me, wow, this is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, it feels very real. Thanks for telling us all that.
Yeah.
It's interesting, Tess. I mean, I kind of, normally we ask just like, hey, that moment, you know, when this thing happened, what did you feel like? But I actually kind of want to go back a little bit to see what your frame of mind was even going into that conversation, because this isn't just like another week. You know, I mean, just what struck me was how much, I mean, kids, another kid, already one kid, another kid on the way, then COVID, then, you know, trip canceled. Like, what was your mindset before we even get to, you know, like, what was your mindset like in that period before you found out about this news?
I think unknown is a word that's coming up for me, Joel, and I think that will resonate for a lot of people, right? In the early days of COVID, there were a lot of unknowns. And I think there was also a lot of, there was uncertainty, which I think then evolved into fear for a lot of people for a while, you know, and I remember like daycare shut down and my husband and I were both working full time, had a 2-year-old at home, and you can't turn around when you've got a 2-year-old in the room for a second. So it was pretty exhausting.
Yeah.
I think craving information is something we probably all identify with at that phase.
Yes.
And I remember I anticipated you asking the question about kind of what was your feeling. And I think kind of dread, there was a sense of dread when I got the email asking to talk, right? That's always in any aspect of life, a little nerve wracking. And so I think I felt more dread in that moment and then relief once I knew what it was going to be. What is the thing, right? The anticipation.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. And 'cause now I know. And once you know, you can manage it. Right. In some cases you can't, like, there's not much to be done in that particular case, but the anticipation and the waiting to know, to find out is, I think, one of the hardest parts in this instance, the story, but also in life in general, applies to a lot of the things.
Yeah. I love, Joel, that you asked the question that way and Tess that you answered it that way. 'Cause I think it's so true that, you know, when you have this unknown in front of you, and this, you know, hey, we got to talk. It's like, what could it be? And you kind of can spin out into all different directions. And I've had that experience many times and so many times, almost every time, probably. What my mind can imagine is worse than what's actually happening.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's wild, right? Sometimes between 3:30 a.m. and 4:15 a.m. Yeah. 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 The wildest of possibilities.
That's right.
So we're kind of highlighting this gap, this anticipatory gap, you know, where you sort of know something is coming that might be uncomfortable, bad or whatever, but you don't know what it is yet. What do you do with, like, 'cause we can talk about what we like learn from this and whatnot, but like, what do we, and this was a while ago, but do you remember what you did in that period? You know, it's, how do you manage that? What do you do in that window?
Yeah. Well, I think this is a theme that's consistent with your podcast in general and my stage of re-energizing as it relates to work too. But it comes down to personal sustainability, right? And kind of managing your own needs and calm and fostering that. And so this is something that I kind of wish that I established these practices and norms earlier in my career on a day-to-day basis when I was much more in the everything's a hustle, always got to sprint. You know, looking back now, it's been 19 years. That's not, you can't sprint for 19 years. And so at that time, between the got the email, scheduled the call and the call, of course, I tried to make the call happen as soon as possible, probably same day. So we're not talking a really long time frame here. But, you know, it was probably, knowing where I was at the time, going for a walk on the dirt road to get some air and some sun and really focusing on kind of managing your own. Jay, you said something a moment ago that I think is there's a lot of wisdom in is what is the mind can run with things before you have the information. And so whatever it was I needed to do to kind of manage that so that I could show up to the call as kind of neutral as possible, I think was my priority in that moment. And I think is a great learning for day-to-day life in this profession and in careers in general.
Yeah, that's a great takeaway. Tell us about the kind of days after that call. Like, you know, how did you communicate to the rest of your team? Like, what was that experience like, you know, taking that information forward?
Yeah, I think the immediate moments after, I think I did in a way felt an oddly, I felt a sense of relief in knowing and having the information. Once that call was over, just kind of, again, taking a moment to take a breath, right? And then pick up the phone and call my boss. I think this was a Friday afternoon that this happened too, but I called my boss and I remember something he said to me that I have carried with me. And that is that most things are usually not as good or as bad as they seem at first. He was kind and generous given the news. It was the biggest deal that I had signed at the time. And so, you know, it was a big loss, but with that comes some silver linings, of course, right? You know, you're signing a deal which commits you to doing certain work. You won't have to deliver that work anymore. That's, you know, there's value in that. But one of the learnings is, again, coming back to this point about what our minds can do to us, to think, how horrible is this? And kind of run down that path and to try to stay in the center. That I think that was really rich and valuable for me at the time.
Yeah, I really love what he said to you in that moment. It reminds me of a couple of things, you know, sort of like this old Chinese proverb about, you know, my son just broke his leg. Oh, that's so horrible. Then he can't go to the war. It's like, oh, that's so great. But then this thing happens. It's like, oh, that's so horrible. And what you're talking about is sort of staying in the center. Yeah. And it reminded me of something somebody told me once about trying to stay in like this mindset of curiosity can be very freeing and, yeah, and comforting. It's sort of like, oh, okay, this major thing just happened. I wonder where that's going to lead us. I wonder what comes next, mm-hmm, you know, is a way to kind of be at peace with that. I think that's amazing that he said that to you.
It served me in that moment. It served me in my career since then and in life in general, right? I mean, yes. There's a lot of truth to it. And I think from a business perspective, what opportunity was then available to us because we had the time, the space, the resources to pursue other things. It did inform a shift in strategy that, you know, it was also tied to kind of challenges with the regulatory process, which I know both of you can really relate to as well in your careers, is being tied to regulatory approvals and these processes that are really tightly managed make it hard. And how do we pivot around that? And what opportunities are there that lie outside of that? So I think that was also a good business learning in the moment too.
Absolutely. I'm thinking about, Tess, how you put it in terms of the staying in the center. I like, Jay, how you put it too. It's like life is long. These projects are long. These careers are long. Many of us, I think, can think back to a time where a project or a deal or whatever died only to be born again. Better, bigger, whatever, stronger. Or maybe the learning was hey, actually, you know, it allowed me to free up time to work on something else that I wouldn't have been able to work on at all. And I'm curious, Jay, you mentioned the stay curious, and Tess, you've mentioned the like state of the center. I think we've talked about like just how awareness of this concept is really important. But I'm wondering what like the next step is. Let's say you're in that, you know, I'm thinking, Tess, you're in this moment, you're aware of it. That's like half the battle, you know, right? Okay. Like that even just getting that far is like super impressive. But then there's still this tug, right? I don't know. I don't want to tell me if your experience is different. What I tend to experience is like, there's still this tug. Okay. I'm aware of this potential bad news or whatnot. And I'm aware that I want to get back to center, that a good move here would be to let go, to remain curious. I'm curious to hear both of your thoughts on like, how do you do that?
It's a good question, Joel. It was a big disappointment, and I don't want to romanticize it in hindsight to say that, oh, I just kind of came to center. I was really disappointed.
You were far away from center for parts of this experience. You were in left field. Yeah, you were in, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and so just to be realistic, like, you know, I think, and now I'm speaking as if I'm talking to my 4-year-old, you're allowed to be disappointed, right? You know, and I think that letting yourself feel the emotions and then taking a step away almost is necessary to kind of then come back to it and give yourself time to process and time to think. I think kind of our best solutions may not come immediately, right? And taking a beat, you know, feel your disappointment, try to find a center, you know, go for a walk, get your green juice, hot toddy, you know, and then take the space, I think is the thesis here of kind of getting that space to then be making really creative ideas and solutions to take the next steps.
Yeah. One of the things you said a couple times now is, you know, taking a walk, getting some sunlight, getting out in nature. That certainly is a big thing for me. Makes a huge difference. I think we've heard other people on the podcast reference that as well. And I think we've all probably heard, you know, various studies or certain evidence, right, out there about, you know, being out in nature, being out in fresh air is like helpful to people. I don't know whether it comes up so often here because we're all, you know, kind of interested in the environment, renewable energy, so that, you know, there's sort of like this self-fulfilling prophecy, but it's definitely, I think, a really valuable thing.
There's some science behind it. Yeah. No, I mean, we moved out of Center City in large part because we felt the effects, you know, all of it, you know, but then it, those effects, you know, the city prompted me to read this book called The Nature Fix. It's written by this journalist back in 2017. I'd be curious, it's been 8 years now, go follow up on the research. But she went around, and this author, and interviewed all the scientists who were researching this growing body of science of the impact of nature on the human body, on things like creativity, stress, et cetera. And the research was relatively early, but promising. It was sort of like where exercise science research was back in like the 80s, you know, and now you can't turn like 2 feet away in any direction without seeing some magazine like run more, live longer, you know, like all these benefits. There's been so many studies, but the preliminary research, at least at that time, was, yeah, they would measure somebody's cortisol levels before going on a hike. They would go on the hike, come back, measure them again, like lower. Okay, we're gonna actually not even go on a hike. We're just gonna spray the terpenoids. You know, there's like 10,000 different terpenoids that these trees put out. Like thousands. Mm-hmm. Just spray somebody, have them breathe it in. Stress goes down. I mean, there's like a very direct like linkage. So it's, I don't know, it's kind of fascinating, but I think it's real. We feel it, but I think it's also backed by science, which is pretty cool.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about, and you mentioned in your bio that you're mentoring the next generation of female leaders in this industry. You know, how has it been being a mom, being a woman in this industry. How are you taking your experience and helping your mentees go forward?
It's a tricky question to answer. And I think that that is because the industry has evolved. One of the clear memories I have from working in this industry right out of college, actually, Jay, is being at a meeting with you, another one of our colleagues, and one of our utility partners. Mm-hmm. And they brought, in Pennsylvania, they brought, you know, a dozen or so employees to the meeting. We were in this big boardroom and I was the only woman. You know, there are a lot of blue blazers around the desk, the table. I was the only woman. And I remember being so intimidated. I was probably also the youngest person in the room, but I was the one who had the data on the program performance and all the insights. And I was intimidated to speak up. And so that was a very early career memory for me. And I have others like it, you know, but the industry has evolved a great deal in the time since we all started working in it. And I think that now that would be an uncommon experience for someone to have. But I think confidence is a big key message here, and helping people tap into their own confidence and knowledge and trusting that. That's kind of part of the soft work. And then the more practical work and strategic work is about structures and systems and communicating effectively. And, you know, so I think the work in mentoring runs the gamut from the strategic to the practical to the kind of emotional work and the mental work of it. And it's all necessary, right? It all has to be part of the puzzle. I think one aspect of kind of women working in this industry or any kind of professional role is the stage of life of someone who is returning to work or planning to go out on maternity leave or return from it. Because with that comes a whole host of other challenges that aren't kind of baseline, I'm a woman in the workplace, but rather I'm facing these really specific challenges. And, you know, you if you're kind of the birthing parent, you go through a lot physically. And then there's, of course, the emotional and the mental and the exhaustion, all of it, kind of any parent can relate to. But focusing on that particular life stage is, I think, really rich and exciting. And I think, you know, you ask what it's like being a working mom, it's hard. I don't want to sugarcoat that. I think that you've got a lot of demands and a lot of competing priorities at time. And it's necessary to have a certain level of flexibility and dynamicism to it, because sometimes you need to lean one direction more than the other. And it's critical for us to be able to support new parents in the workplace, especially women, so that we can continue to foster the development of female leaders. So we continue to work towards the kind of ratio that we see of women in organizations, specifically in the more senior roles. So women at that stage of their career are really getting the support that they need, which is hard, but possible, in order to ensure that they continue having really strong, successful careers and contribute to the organizations and the missions of those organizations to success.
Tess, I'd love to go back to the first point you made there and go a little bit deeper. The point was around confidence. Hmm. And you gave your specific example of being in that boardroom. You also acknowledged that, hey, the ratios have shifted, but not entirely, right? Mm-hmm. You know, especially, and you've made the comment at the end about the, you know, in senior roles, especially, yes. You know.
Yeah.
And there's a book I read recently called The Mirrored Door. Very good. And the point, one of the main, there are a number of takeaways, but the main takeaway I had, and I want to put this out there, and then I'd love to get your specific take on this, Tess, was that for a lot of women, in her vast experience, was that a limiter for upward trajectory was often executive presence. And it's just like this hard thing. And I think it's related maybe to the confidence point you made. And it's like, she made this point that what gets a lot of women promotions earlier in their career are things like being punctual, on time, having all the facts, all of the information. And then there's a point where, hey, actually to get from that, whatever, senior manager to director, or director to VP, or VP to chief, whatever, you know, mm-hmm. there's a pivot where it's like, no, it's not about having all of the answers. It's about taking risk and about being confident taking that risk and making a bold decision. And, you know, and which ultimately involves not having all of the answers. And it's like this pivot, and it's like a boardroom presence kind of thing, an executive presence. And I'd just be curious to get your take. Like, you can read that in a book, right? And it's academic, and you're taking it from this other person. And I'd be curious to get your perspective, Tess. Like, does that resonate? Is that what you've seen? Would you say it differently? What are your thoughts? Yeah.
That's really interesting, Joel. I would say that resonates. And there's a progression, right, of the skills that you need to develop at various stages in your career. And there is a shift in kind of what works early in your career and what's necessary to achieve certain levels of an organization. Yes. Is it rooted in confidence? Yes. Probably not entirely, but I think that that is a critical input, and being able to ensure that people kind of trust in their own knowledge, abilities. There's a thread coming up for me about taking that space again and being very thoughtful and intentional and strategic and prepared. I think something that always has stood out to me is that leadership isn't necessarily the same thing as management, and not necessarily the same thing as being at the top of the org. I think people can be leaders and exhibit leadership qualities at all levels of the org, and that's necessary for the health and success of an organization. But yeah, I think confidence is a thread through all of it. I think you're right about that.
Yeah, one of the things that you made me think of as you were describing, you know, that picture of how to gain confidence, I think, in a way, is, you know, sort of, I think there's this kind of myth, and maybe it was real at a certain point, of the leader, usually a man, who's like shooting from the hip, just gets it all, is making quick decisions, bam, bam, bam. And you talked about sort of taking space, being thoughtful. Mm-hmm. And I think there's starting to be more evidence of, you know, successful entrepreneurs oftentimes being people who've waited for the right time, who've sort of sat with ideas for a while before making that decision. And I think there's a shift happening to some extent where, you know, that's being understood and valued more. It's not necessarily always the first instinct that is the right answer. Sometimes it is, but sometimes it's not. And so being able to kind of have the idea, but then not necessarily act on it immediately, it can lead to a lot better decision making in some of these cases.
I think so, Jay. And I think it's also a balance between that and, especially in startups, continuing to make progress and move, right? And so finding the balance between speed and kind of taking the time to get centered and ground in the knowledge. And on the confidence front, not so much necessarily building confidence as tapping into it. You know, and I think that that is a nuance, but an important one.
Tell us more about what the difference is.
There's internal and external work when it relates to confidence. I think there's tone of voice, and the executive presence category Joel's talking about is kind of the external work. But the internal work is not doubting oneself, is having the trust in your knowledge, your values, your beliefs, your experience. Building confidence is simply tapping into each of these things that professionals have developed over time. And sometimes it's easy to get pulled away from them, pulled outward, but really the work is kind of looking in. You know, I've worked with a number of coaches, and I think that that's one of the great learnings that I've had is looking in, getting grounded, taking a breath before the call, right? To anchor in your own confidence, in your own knowledge, in your own stories, in your own prepared thoughts. I think that's 50% of the work.
Maybe even more, you know, it's I like how you put it, inner and outer test. It's like, I think back to like business school, and it's like, yeah, the various communications for developing leaders classes and like lots of good stuff, you know, start your presentation with telling people what you're going to tell them, and, you know, and then tell them and then tell them what you told them, and don't do ums. And that's all really good, right? Like being prepared, being clear, you know, doing the thing where you're zigzagging the room with eye contact, you know, those are all like really good stuff. Great. Cool. If you don't do that inner work, though. Maybe you didn't even show up for the presentation, you know, or like grab the mic, you know, at the right moment in time because you weren't confident. Or maybe it came across as wooden or inauthentic. But if it's like, if it rings true with your soul, you know, you might realize whatever your position is in the company or any, you might have that confidence to say, this is a moment. I have the information. I'm going to speak now. So I don't know. It definitely what you're saying. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah, that's really rich, Joel. I like your phrasing a lot. And I think probably every listener has a moment that they thought of when they heard you say, not speaking up, grabbing the mic and speaking up at the right time. And I can picture myself in so many different rooms where I had the question, you know, that question
right
to
there.
Really dig into it that I wanted to ask, but I chickened out and I didn't ask it, or I didn't make the point. I thought, oh, I should say this. And I didn't do it, right? And so, yeah, being ready, doing the works to be ready to make the point or ask the question when the opportunity is there.
Yeah, right on. I love that.
Yeah, that's a great place to end. Tess, this has been so wonderful to talk with you. As we said in the beginning, it's been a lot of time. And I feel like we're sort of here talking together about how we've all grown, particularly you know, as we're interviewing you, but talking about how much has changed, how much we've developed and grown as people, as professionals. And it's just been such a pleasure talking with you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Likewise. Thanks for having me. It's funny, when we first got on this call, we were talking about how it's been a dozen or so years or more that we, since we've spoken together, but now I'm right back in it from when we all used to work alongside each other.
Right back in
many,
it.
Many years ago.
Like it.
Yeah, this has been a treat. Thank you both. I really appreciate and admire what you're doing with this podcast. I'm glad to be a part of it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Tess.
Thank you for joining us on Re-Energize.
If you like what you hear, if you feel your energy rising, please pass this on to your friends.
And hey, you might have a story to share. If that's the case, you can reach out to us using our email address found in our show notes.